I've been sanctioned. I've been hollowed. I've been revered and down there swallowed. Step on away. Take back your hand.
To SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
That's caliente ahora.
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff. It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Good morning. Welcome to So Hot Right Now. My name is Sophie. I'll be taking you through to midday, chatting the best in arts and culture right here in Sydney and all over. This is your weekly dose of it here on 2SER. And oh my gosh, we have a massive show for you today. Coming up, we're going to be chatting with Samantha Everton, who is a photographer artist, and she's got a beautiful new series that's featuring right now in the Head On Photo Festival. It's called Indochine, and we're going to be talking to her up next. Also, if you're a geek, happy free comic book day. We're going to be chatting with Blake Howard about all the goodies that we're hoping to pick up. And also, you can be hearing from a new exhibition called Enough Carlos that's happening at UNSW. We're going to be talking to the curator and the artist, all about that. So massive show. But to kick things off, here's a tune from Exe. It's called, Love Inks, sorry, and it's called Exe.
A girl once woke up in her sleep, then found herself invisible. In the streets she drove every single night, all turned into a soundbite. She wished herself to someone else, now she can be any self. Her friends were waiting forever and ever for someone so clever. You were never there when you should have been. You can never see what was right in front. If you leave it to me, I will see you around. See you again, well, I doubt that now. You were never there when you should have been. See what was right in front. If you leave it to me, I'll see you around. See you again, well, I doubt that now. The girl and me, we read a book about numerology. She feels that something far away is holding her back again. In the mirror of yourself,
Jonathan Pye here. I'll be touring Australia between the 18th and 26th of May. Guaranteed ball tampering free zone. I promise you I will not be tampering with mine or anybody else's balls. Tickets available at frontiercomedy.com. See you there.
The world is burning. The world is burning.
Climate change poses the same threat
the world is burning
right now.
Wind is destroying a lot of problems. And number one, it's killing the birds. Killing the birds. Killing the birds.
World is burning.
Killing
right now.
Coral bleaching.
Solar panels.
The Carmichael mine.
Carbon emissions.
World is burning.
Hydraulic fracturing.
Plastic bags.
This is too much.
What are we doing to the planet? Subscribe to Think Sustainability on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts to find out.
The world is burning.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture with me, Sophie. This year at Head On Photo Festival, Samantha Everton will be presenting her new exhibition series, Indochine. Exploring the intersection of Western influences and Eastern influences, the series sees a woman navigating the conflicting cultural pressures. Samantha joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Thank you for being here. It's been a huge project, 18 months in the making since from the very beginning concepts. How did that journey start for you?
Yeah, look, this was shot in Vietnam in a studio, and it was a compilation of 18 months from the very first seed of an idea through to montaging all the images with cut-out collages mm-hmm. and storyboarding the idea right through to, I guess, commissioning artists and finding those unique pieces which are symbolisms in my images. I had someone... particularly Larry Edwards from Cirque du Soleil. He's a head costume designer, and he made the amazing elaborate Tudor collars and Elizabethan collars. And it's just collaborating with a lot of people and patience and time in preparation.
Mm. So you mentioned the initial concepts. So you sketched it out and then collaged it out?
Yeah, so I literally, if you can put yourself in my shoes, I work out of my house and my lounge room in particular, that's my studio. Mm. And I always like to mention that because I think that being an artist can be glorified, but it's actually on my lounge room floor, I'm literally cutting out pieces of paper and colours and putting them together. I think my work is often dominated by colour, and I like to have several layers to my work. And on the surface, it's bright and it brings you in. And there's a little bit of a comical aspect, and then as you stand closer and spend time with the image, it will slowly reveal itself to you. I'm in my lounge room getting all those colours together, and then I start storyboarding the image and drawing exactly what I want to be in each section of the series of work.
Yeah, and what kind of inspired you in this series in particular?
Yeah, look, I did actually grow up in a multicultural family. I have siblings that are adopted from Thailand, Vietnam. And although this work isn't directly about my family, identity has always been a strong theme and a strong interest in my life. So I wanted to show in this body of work the unique blend between cultures and how somebody adapts in their environment.
Mm. Did they have any input in this show?
Oh, they're very supportive and they know that my producing this work is... absolutely intricate and wild and wacky at the same time in the production process, and they're not there, but they're very supportive of the whole exhibition.
Because I feel like they would have been in a quite unique position, stepping in both those worlds.
Yeah, look, I wanted to, show the meshing of those worlds together. And look, having grown up in that world myself with my siblings, I could see how each person adapted to their environment. And I think if you have a look at this exhibition from beginning to end, I wanted to show not only the person morphing into their environment, but by the end image, being at one with themselves.
The exhibition itself, though, it's called Indochine. It's a very interesting title. Why'd you come up with that title?
I think it encompassed, a period of time where the East and West were very influenced by each other. And I wanted to capture those moments. You'll notice throughout the series, I've got an Elizabethan-style image and I've got one called Miss Saigon. And I really wanted to capture those moments in time. And I think that period of time where Indochine was the Asian nation as a whole really, really captures that meshing of cultures.
Mm. Does it? Because that was a time of colonialism, so does that element come through in the work as well?
No, I wanted this work to, to the viewer to bring their own self-experience to the work, and it's not necessarily about one culture dominating another. It's about the two cultures meshing together and influencing each other.
Yeah. So you mentioned before you worked with Cirque du Soleil's Larry Edwards with this, and you collaborate with heaps of people on it. Who are some of the other artisans you worked with?
I work with someone called Bazaar Noir, and she actually produced the beautiful and gorgeous headpieces. She's a milliner, and she works in Greece. And it's quite funny that I would I produce this work with people all over the world, because I do source people who are really intricate and detailed in their work. And I guess attention to detail is very important to me in this work, and so I find people who really have that intimate attention to detail in every facet of the pieces they produce.
Because, like, talking about intricacy, you had some local artisans working on some of the bodices in Vietnam, and then you had a Chinese artisan working on the wallpaper.
I know, and I also had live snakes and live macaw birds in the set. I like everything to be in front of the viewer, and it was important to me to source things locally and to work locally in Vietnam. But it's my motivation in amongst everything that's happening on the set is that I like the end result to be the viewer can really feel confidence and immerse himself in it, because everything was happening in that moment.
You just mentioned there that you wanted everything to be in front of you when you shot. Is that a bit of your photojournalist, like, background coming through in a bit?
Well, I did start out as a photojournalist with Melbourne Times as a cadet photographer in Melbourne. And look, that experience really taught me about lighting and about how to think on the spot. But it also taught me that I wanted to move everything around. And as a documentary photographer, that's not what you're doing. You're documenting what's there. So, yes, it did inform my practice and I learnt my skills through photojournalism. But with this imagery, I really feel strongly that the characters in my story need to be immersed in the moment for the meaning of my work to really come through. So when I met Trang Pham was the person who modelled in this body of work, and I needed to find someone I felt I could work with, I felt who understood what I was wanting to express, but was also happy to have a 2-metre-long Burmese python around her neck and a macaw bird flying, who are rather huge, flying past her. So it's a meshing of all of these things together to give that realism in the image.
Yeah. Where did you get those animals from?
Oh, the snake the bird in particular was really hard to track down, and I ended up through social media finding out where the Macaw Enthusiast Club meets at a certain cafe in Saigon on a certain weekend every second Thursday in the month, and I went and sat there and introduced myself, and then they said, oh, come out casually, we like to fly the birds out in this swamp area on the edge of town. So I went out there, and not knowing if I was in the right place, and it's 40 degrees, and then one bird swoops past me. I'm like, oh, yes, I'm in the right place. And then a motorbike comes past with cages of birds on the back, and then they basically exercise the birds here.
Right.
And, every element of my work that I sourced in Vietnam was just a journey in itself. Finding an albino python and is just quite unique to do that.
Was there a reason why you wanted to work with animals in particular in this series?
Look, I think the animals bring an element to the image of symbolism and of mystery. And it was really important. I can't separate the fact that I do like colour as well. Mm. And these animals bring this energy and this colour to the images. And I always like to say that my work is organised spontaneity. As you mentioned before, it's 18 months in the process to get to this point, but the actual moment is only a few seconds. Mm. And you've got 90% of it planned. You've got the wallpapers, you've got the costumes, you've got the model, and then you've got the bird. But the bird has to perform in that moment. So it's really, organised spontaneity, and those last few seconds are patience. It's all about patience.
Yeah. I find it interesting because, like, when people think of Asia, there's some things, exotic, which can be a little problematic, especially when you have such exotic animals featured in it.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of tiptoe that line?
Look, I'm not trying to stereotype Asia in any way at all. Mm. Throughout history of time in all nations, birds have certain symbolism, and I think that comes across in the work without stereotyping anybody. And you'll notice as the work progresses that, as I mentioned, the character in my story becomes at one with herself rather than influenced by her setting.
Yeah, because you go through quite a few eras in this series. Which eras are you kind of travelling through?
Oh, look, broadly speaking, it's from Victorian era through Tudor, through Elizabethan, and then I come into the 19th and 20th century, and I'm depicting the 1920s, the 1950s, the 1970s. And I just think it's a progression that anybody can relate to. In our lives, we all at various points challenge our identity, no matter if we come from the country or the city or, different cultural heritage. And I like to bring that through those periods of time to the present time and just show that unique moment and how we become ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, across the ages, there's always been that mishmash of multiculturalism.
Yeah.
And now people, especially now when we're having a lot of talks about race, culture, appropriation, appreciation. Did you want to bring that out as well in this work?
Look, I guess in a certain sense, I want people to bring their own self to the images. I don't want to dictate with each image what it's about or how they should feel about it. So I want to put it out there, and I want to show those worlds meshing together. But I'm not wanting to comment on the way people are idealized in a certain way in certain periods of time or their culture. I just want people to bring themselves to each image. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Samantha, thank you so much for joining us here today. It's a beautifully stunning set of images. Can't wait to see it.
I'm
at
glad
Head On.
You enjoyed it.
But thank you again.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
That there was Samantha Everton chatting about her new exhibition, Indochine. You can catch it now at Head On Photo Festival at Art House Gallery from now until May 19. Put all those details up along with this podcast. Here's a tune now from Necker. It's called Book of Job.
According to Psalm 27, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Whom shall I fear? Look up on the sky and tell me what is left for us to see. So many mornings dead we wake up. No money in the pocket to pay. Never stop to take the shortcut. Though it might be easier for me. Whenever it's or that is as much. Confess and recognizes me. I go down on my knees and pray. The morning, no matter what comes, on my knees, I will stay. I keep beseeching, so let the storms come. And I know that the Lord will conquer everything. Cause I know that you got me. And despair are the words of the wicked ones. See? And though they may juggle a food to the brim, their prodigal souls. Suffering and silent is what we know. True revolution is peace. Watering and crying, this plant will grow. And all this corruption we see, just like Job, we suffer in silence. Be diligent and unknown. Honesty.
Everything, 'cause I know that you got me and I got you and I- Looking for a way to spoil Mum this Mother's Day? Sydney Charter Boat wants to give her the five-star treatment. Join us Sunday, May 13, aboard MV Eclipse for our Mother's Day Harbour Cruise. For only $70, enjoy a three-hour cruise, bubbles on arrival, generous seafood buffet lunch, and onboard entertainment. Call Kate on 0427 284 946 to book now. Sydney Charter Boat sponsors 2SER.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie. And if you're a geek, happy comic book day. Oh, I'm kind of sad I'm not there with you guys. But hey, at least we've got Blake on the line.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard?
And Sophie Lye.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. What a beautiful free comic book day it is today.
What a weekend. I mean, yesterday it was May the 4th. Every Star Wars fan was out and about. They're having a major, like, thing happening at the powerhouse. And it's also free comic book day. It's geeky Christmas.
Geeky Christmas, indeed. You got to love it. We're getting spoiled all over the place. Avengers Infinity War last week, free comics this week.
Mm-hmm.
What more can you want?
Well, it's heaps, apparently.
Heaps more. What more can I want? Everything else that
all
I want because
thing.
I'm a geek.
Yeah.
And I cannot be satisfied completely. I must have more things.
But what is free comic book day for people who don't know?
So, guys, once a year, all of the comic book companies get involved to, you know, support the medium essentially and basically get you in with a special issue of some of your favorite titles or potentially sometimes a launched, like a pre-launch title for a big comic book. And you sort of go in there, choose a couple of free comic books to sort of wet your whistle, if you like. And it happens internationally just to support the medium. And then, you know, for all the diehard comic book fans, it's awesome because it's more free comics, as well as your usual regular weekly pickup if you're an obsessive like perhaps Soph and I. But otherwise, sometimes it's just like that kick in the pants that you need if you've fallen off the wagon of your obsession. So it's kind of that perfect mix of like free stuff, which is awesome, but the companies know that, you know, giving a little bit back to its loyal readers and potentially some new people means that there's going to be a lot of benefit of people maybe coming back next week to pay for some comics.
Indeed. And it's also just encouraging reading. Kids, go read. It's good for you.
Yes.
Reading is essential.
And look, some pictures too, right? There's some pictures there as well.
Totally. So today is the day. And if you're going to your free comic book, if you're going to your local comic book, they usually all have sales as well. So pick up some other titles while you're there. And
yes,
people will be going crazy cosplaying. So if you have an outfit, wear it with pride.
Damn Skippy. And if you didn't get in there a couple of weeks ago to buy Action Comics 1000, the 1000th Superman comic, then you might be able to pick up some scraps because they did go very, 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 very quickly. I think there were 10 or so variant covers. I know a couple of madmen who got them all, but I just got the one. And yeah, you might be able to pick one of those up on there as well.
Good stuff. So what else are you going to try and pick up today, Blake?
Look, I'm going to just see what's across the board. I've fallen off a lot of runs recently, and I've been waiting. I've been sort of standing back. There's this beautiful series by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo called Dark Knight's Metal, which is sort of along the dark multiverse of the DCU. Has a whole bunch of characters in there. I have been holding myself back like Hannibal Lecter in that freaking stand-up thing with the metal across my face, not reading it because I really think I got to glance at a friend's copy and I just thought this thing is made for a trade paperback or a hardcover or eventually hopefully something like an absolute edition. So I'm going to go check out and see if all the Dark Knight's metal are there and if I can be swayed. That's that. Frustratingly, so if you know that one of my regular pickups is the Doomsday Clock, which you and I have both pretty much caught up with,
yeah,
that has now moved instead of a monthly to every 2 months, which is very annoying.
This is the thing. This is why I don't read monthlies. I wait until they're all in one trade because It's just disappointing when that happens. And it happens too often, especially at the two big comic book companies. They'll just be like, they overbook, their writers are overworked and so are their artists, and then things just fall off. It happens.
Yeah, I know, it sucks. But it's just like one of those things that was looking so promising. But if you guys have already read, and you know, I think today maybe is a good day to, especially while the sales are on, is to jump in and grab some Brian Michael Bendis stuff from his Marvel days, some of his sort of classic books, because he is coming to DC in a big bad way with a new series, a limited series, a 6-issue series called The Man of Steel, which came out of the back of Superman in Action Comics. So really looking forward to see what Bendis does in the DC universe to kick that off. And yeah, I'm just going to look around. There's so much great stuff going around in all the, you know, the different characters. I think, as I say to you, Soph, I still think that the Batman Detective Comics run is the best run in the Batman universe at the moment, and I've picked up all the trades, and I think we've shared those. Really strong run there. I'm looking for new stuff like that. But what about yourself? What's on high on your get list today for Free Comic Book Day?
So I'm a little behind, so I'm going to try and pick up some Brian K. Vaughan stuff. So Paper Girls and Saga,
a few new good volumes stuff. Of that.
So Saga's up to I think volume 8, volume 9. To come very shortly, but unfortunately not today. And the other one I want to pick up is Paper Girls. Heard some very fantastic things about that, so need to pick up me some Paper Girls and catch up on Rat Queens, which is a bit more adult but also fun.
I love the title. I know nothing about it. You've sold me with Rat Queens. Speaking of comic book stuff, there is, it's probably a good segue, Infinity War is now the fastest grossing film.
Oh my gosh.
Of all time. It's absolutely smashing things. It's outgrossed Justice League's entire run in $725 million in worldwide in just 6 days of its release.
Was it going to be that hard to beat Justice League, though? Let's be honest.
It's not hard, but it was never going to not win against Justice League, but the fact that it did it in 6 days is all the more of a knife turning. So no other real comic book geek properties and stuff are out at the movies this week. Everything has run screaming. We've got Deadpool 2 coming up, which also this week, a fantastic song from Celine Dion, a collaboration from Celine Dion, the diva.
The diva
of Canada.
Canada who lives in Vegas and has like, what, a 20-year residency? Then it's just still going fine.
Yeah, look, if you're not familiar, Vegas kind of like, if you remember in Space Jam when they say they're going to lock Michael Jordan in a park and make him play basketball all day, that's kind of what happens in Vegas to big stars like Britney Spears and Celine Dion. Except instead of them being chained there, they live in some palatial penthouse hotel overlooking the strip and get paid like $1 million a week to just stay there and have like tourists come in and see them every single week and just pack out shows. And so somewhere in amongst that busy schedule, Ryan Reynolds and the team at Deadpool 2 have convinced her to do a song for Deadpool 2 that is accompanied by a beautiful Deadpool in heels dancing and includes like a little coda where she tells Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool to shut up Spider-Man, which is just absolutely fantastic. Aww. So that was another huge one this week. You know, Free Comic Book Day, Deadpool's the next thing coming along. Yeah. Another movie with a villain played by Josh Brolin, but this time without the CGI, just the a whisker of CGI, not all CGI.
No.
So you get to see his face. But yeah, it's Deadpool. It's just unfathomable. I don't actually know what's better. I don't know what I enjoy more, all the marketing or the actual movie, because they're both good.
They've been so good, and because this has been a really long lead in marketing, like. Started off with just that sneak peek of who is in the cast and, you know, Ryan Reynolds spelling out Domino's name in actual dominoes. And it's been really fun for the fans. And then when the first trailer came out with him pretending to paint and then like, oh, look at all this CGI. It's just been such a joy. I will miss it when the movie's out because it gives me so much joy as someone who also works in marketing. This is how you do a campaign.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's also, you know, if you get a chance, I'm not sure how many folks like subscribe. It's so worth it. Subscribe to the New York Times Online. There's a brilliant profile up of him, and he rarely does profiles as himself, right? it's often as Wade or Deadpool, but like he does a great profile about like how, you know, he sees Wade, you know, the Merc with the Mouth and Deadpool as his kind of like his alter ego. So he has the most fun being able to put the suit on and just, you know, step into this character who, as much as we might like to think that it's Ryan Reynolds all day, every day, like he's quite an anxious dude in real life, according to the profile. And he has to really talk himself up. But like, that's why he loves it. Like, this is why he loves the character. It's because he just seems like he steps in those shoes and he's the guy. He's the guy who's got all the confidence and all the stuff. So really awesome stuff there.
So that's a couple of weeks away. And then the week after that, you have Uno.
Solo. We prefer Uno. And you have to say it in a sexy semi-Italian accent. But yeah, guys, look, Solo is coming out. Again, we're pretty spoiled this year with so much good geek stuff coming out all in the one sort of time. Deadpool 2, then Solo. Solo coming out, some big news this week. George Lucas swung by the Solo set, according to Ron Howard on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And Ron Howard said that they did a take, and he actually listened to George Lucas suggest something to be said, suggest something that Han should say in that scene, because it felt, you know, he thought of a potentially alternate and better version of how to get that information across, and he shot it. So really fascinating that George Lucas has got this still very close but sort of frustrated relationship on the edge of the Star Wars universe, this thing that he created, you know.
He's the godfather of it. He's never going to leave.
No, look, I mean, you can't deny that he definitely, you know, despite some of the execution and probably some of that tussle that he needs in his creative process to make things better, is undoubtedly this is his lore. Like, he knows the characters inside and out, and it's so cool that he's still sort of semi-involved without actually being involved, and other creatives can get in there. But yeah, really interesting, because, you know, the last one, I don't think he ever had that same relationship necessarily with JJ coming on and throwing out lines. JJ, you know, would have had his blessing and just taken it off, and same with Rian Johnson. But Ron Howard and him go way back to Willow, folks, if you remember.
What a time.
And look, American Graffiti, you know, George Lucas's first masterpiece. Ron Howard was the star of the movie. So, you know, they've gone back a long, 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 long time. But as far as even collaborating behind the scenes, was definitely that. So really cool to hear that there's a little bit of that, a little bit of George Lucas endorsement on this one. Hopefully that will quiet down some of those weirdo fans who are still saying that The Last Jedi is terrible. You're all idiots. So that's basically it on the news front this week of Geek.
Excellent. Well, Blake, I'll let you get back to shopping at your local comic book store. But if you are at Kinokuniya today, just be aware that, unfortunately, Marjorie Liu has had to drop out, so her conversation with former Gale of Geeks alumni Maria Lewis will be no more.
Oh, so sad. Sucks. And look, if you don't have cosplay, just wear your underpants on the outside of your jeans.
That too. Well, Blake, thanks for geeking out with us. We'll catch you next week.
See you, Soph. See you guys. Bye.
Bye. And don't forget to listen to our podcast. Yay.
Yay.
Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation. Catch all his reviews there on graffitiwithpunctuation.com. Or you can, like, you know, find him at your local comic book store. He'll be there. Also, listen to the Gaggle of Geeks podcast. You can find us on iTunes and every good podcast player. Just look up 2SER, Gaggle of Geeks. We're going to jump back into the music now. Here's one from Cold, Bold, and Together. It's called Let's Backtrack.
Wait a minute, girl. Let's sit down and have a heart-to-heart talk. I suddenly see our problem when we seem so down and out. First of all, girl, I know that we love each other. Time has shown us that. But it's time that we showed each other. We know exactly.
Want to advance in your current role? Considering a career change? Or maybe you're thinking about the next step in your studies. No matter where you're at in your life story, join us this month for a UTS Postgrad Info Evening to chat about your options. Don't put it off. Explore where postgraduate study can take you. Jump online at pg.uts.edu.au to see the schedule and register for the sessions you're interested in. University of Technology Sydney sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture with me, Sophie Lime. Kalas is a brand new exhibition at the UNSW Galleries exploring the Australian Muslim experience through the lens of 16 artists. Our producer Nicole Beck was lucky enough to meet the co-curator of the work, Noor Shikembi, who gave us some insight into this huge exhibition.
Halas, or in English, Enough, is a new powerful exhibition that unapologetically explores the contemporary Australian Muslim experience. Earlier this week, I caught up with Noor Shikembi, who curated this exhibition alongside Philip George. Here's what she had to say about their inspiration and motivation behind Halas.
He and I have sort of always wanted to put on a show of contemporary Muslim art in Australia, and I've done so previously in Melbourne, and we recently actually co-curated a show in Adelaide at Ace Open with Abdurrahman Abdullah, but there hasn't really been a significant exhibition of contemporary Muslim art in Sydney yet, and this would be probably the first show of its kind here. So yeah, we just feel that it's really topical and timely and quite relevant. I guess the last, how many years has it been? We're in 2018. We're going like 17 years since 9/11. You know, it's been timely for the last 17 years pretty much. And just sort of looking at the socio-political condition, that's an interest for both myself and Phil, how the Muslim community is really, I guess, struggling and surviving through the sort of post 9/11 environment. And also there's an interest in decolonial works and, you know, sort of working through broader issues, systemic and structural issues around racism.
Noor and I walked through the exhibition and we stopped to talk about Hoda Ashfar's work. Right at the entrance of Halas, audiences are confronted with this series of striking portraits entitled Under Western Eyes. Noor told me more about Hoda's work and her motives.
She's making fun of this kind of expectation that female Muslim artists to make, you know, self-portraits of themselves in a veil and they're weeping or they're miserable or they're, you know, secretly desiring some, you know, westernised lifestyle that they can't quite grasp at. And, yeah, so it's just, I guess, a way of pushing back against that expectation. It's got really strong feminist undertones and also, you know, you can see she's referencing pop culture and just sort of really playing around with those images. Are really powerful, they're funny, they're intense, and, you know, so beautifully realised, especially when you see them in person. The colours just pop. There's almost, they're so vibrant and almost like velvety in their texture. And she's just done a, you know, sort of a brilliant job at nailing this sort of commentary about Muslim women and in particular Iranian women in the diaspora. You know, the expectation isn't just sort of from the community as an audience, but it's also referring to what galleries expect from female Muslim artists. And that's the pushback and this, I guess, self-loathing. It's almost like if you are proudly female and Muslim, they don't want to know that narrative. They don't want to hear about that. They want to hear how miserable you are or how oppressed you are and or, you know, how, you know, terribly naughty you are, you know, discarding your veil and going and having, you know, this very westernised lifestyle. And that's simply not the reality and not the case. And, yeah, someone like Huda is really sort of picking that apart. And although she's not veiled herself, and many Muslim women are not, women in veils are actually a minority within the Muslim community, it's great that she's taking on that narrative and that she's pushing back against that, because whether you wear a veil or not as a Muslim woman, it becomes symbolic of who you are in the eyes of a Western audience. So regardless of what you actually do or practice or not practice, this is like sort of, I guess, placed upon you. You know, what Huda is saying in her work is there is a particular consumption or type of appetite for certain imagery and certain types of art that depicts Muslim women in a particular way. And if you don't play along with that, there will be some kind of pushback or shutdown. People aren't interested really in the truth. People are only interested in reinforcing what they know to be the truth.
Can you tell me more about the name of the exhibition?
Halas. It's an Arabic word and it has so many different definitions. It's actually not a formal word that's used in Arabic. It's more conversational. And it has, you know, several meanings. So enough, that's it, stop. There's a few ways that you would use the term halas. And the way that we've approached Kalas is we're saying enough, and we're saying this is enough, like this needs to stop, things need to change, and also that as we are and who we are enough. You know, we don't have to try to be what is mainstream Australia, what is white Australia, and this idea of the good Muslim or how Australian you are, you know. We're saying why? Eating a meat pie or going to the football or look how good and how Aussie I am, or, you know, this shouldn't apply. You know, what is Australian culture? You know, what does modern day Australia look like? Why isn't the centre of what Australia looks like in terms of its culture Indigenous? Why aren't we trying to be more so-called Australian, but trying to do that through understanding Indigenous culture. Why is it white?
That was Nicole speaking with co-curator Noor Shkikembi about Kalas. Up next, she speaks with one of the artists involved, Abdullah M.I. Siad, about his cricket-related work, Forbidden Fruit. Stay tuned. But first, here's a tune from Epicentre. It's called Get Off the Phone.
I need to talk to you, yeah, yeah. To let you know what I've been going through, hey, baby. I've got a big old cauliflower ear, and I can hardly hear the business signal screaming in my head. Telling a woman wants to use the phone, lying's wrong, but I'm all alone. Got no gas, and I've got to hear your voice. Cause I have no choice. The words you left unsaid are spinning in my head, so baby, please get off the phone. I really need to talk to you, yeah, yeah. To let you know what I've been going through, hey, baby. I've got a long distance bill that just won't quit. Oh, my bell just had a fit, said the situation's got control of me. Sympathetic to my emergency. Break on through the conversation there. Cause I have no choice. The words we left unsaid are spinning in my head. So baby,
I'm Craig Donarski, Director of Casula Powerhouse Art Centre in Liverpool. We're going to be closed on Anzac Day, but we've got so much else on. There are five exhibitions drawing to a close at the moment, including Southline and Other Metaphors by Tony Priddle, the Archibald Prize Regional Tour, Me to You, The Habit Out of Time, and Lyndall Irons. All of these must finish by 6th of May, so hurry and check it out. We've got our Autumn School Holiday Program in full swing with a huge range of programs, workshops. Check the website for details.
You're back here on It's So Hot Now with me, Sophie. Forbidden Fruit is a work from artist Abdullah M.I. Siad exploring this sport of cricket through a political lens. Nicole spoke to Abdullah more about cricket and fruit.
One of the things that somebody asked me, that why you moved to Australia, and I always say that it's love of cricket. One of those things is love of cricket and the sport, because coming from Pakistan, every being in Pakistan can say it's a huge fan of cricket.
This is Abdullah M.I. Siad. Originally from Pakistan, Abdullah migrated to Australia back in 2006. He's a multidisciplinary artist specializing in sculpture, drawing, performance and installation. Abdullah told me more about his work, Forbidden Fruit, which is featuring in the Halas exhibition.
the work that I'm exhibiting here, it's a work that I've started making in 2007. So it's been almost 11 years now that I've been investigating. So, and the work is called Forbidden Fruit. I took cricket balls and then respond to different tempering incidents since 2007 that's actually happened in the cricket world, and demonstrated that how those incidents actually become part of our lives, and also how they mirror the politics that we lived in, and how the cricket that connects different continents also, when being tempered, its sanctity is being when it's tempered, can also lose followers and can lose also the people who love this game. Because once you're tempered with something, specifically in terms of cricket, which is being called the game of gentlemen, and when you tempered with that idea, the tempered with the idea that you can cheat, then the trust is gone.
So you said that each of these tampered with cricket balls are a response to certain incidents.
So in 2007, right after my arrival, I watched Ashes. And although in Pakistan, when I was living there, we were aware of Ashes and the rivalry between Australia and England, but I actually never knew what it actually feels like. Although I know the rivalry between Pakistan and India, which is actually can be really something else if you would witness. So I actually witnessed something very similar here, that how people were actually using names for each other. They're trying to put each other down, but it was in a sportsman. There was in a sportsman spirit and things. And at that time, I actually encountered the word palm, and I was not aware of the word palm that is being used derogatory towards English in terms of that. And I find it very interesting. And I actually asked a friend about it, and I said, "Is it palm? Are they talking about pomegranate, or you know, what are they talking about it?" So they told me that this is actually the term that they use if they want to insult palm in some way. And I actually find it very interesting, because coming from South Asia, we actually get a lot of different words from palms in terms of insults. So I thought that, you know, I need to do something with that. So I took the cricket ball and I said, with the palm, I have to make a pomegranate, because pomegranate is actually a very popular fruit in South Asia, especially coming from Afghanistan and all that. And pomegranate is also, in Islamic tradition, being considered as one of the heavenly fruits. And I thought it would be interesting for me to carve. So when I carved just the temple of it as a crown, which again goes back to the idea of the queen or the England monarchy, I find it very interesting that how with just few cuts, very minimal, you can actually elicit a quite an interesting idea that historically and presently connects different events quite nicely. It's specifically in terms of colonization of the colonial world, and how I, who lived in a colonized world, and now again in another country where it's in somewhat colonized, but again the rulers are the same, and the same thing happening. So I think this work is actually what takes my own views as being migrant, as being Muslim, who's living in Australia. And when I'm looking at it, I actually realize that all of these incidents happens because the captain or the team leader was the one who either initiated these things or even asked their subordinates to perform these acts. And when you mirror that to the politics of Australian politics, you actually realize that the same things are happening in terms of how the government is taking wrong initiative towards migrants or boat people and refugees. And you can easily see that it's just not the tempering of the balls that is happening. It's also the tempering of our lives that has been going on. And I think this work actually mimics that quite nicely.
That was Abdullah M.I.Siad talking about his work, Forbidden Fruit. He is one of the 16 artists featured in Kalas or Enough, which is the exhibition at the USW Galleries running from now till July 15. Even better, the event is free, so do head on down and catch it. Here's a tune now from Mindfair. It's called Cursed. Mindfair there with Curse. A little grooving for your morning here on So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture with me, Sophie. And we're joined by my wonderful producer, Teresa, for So Hot this week. Good morning, Teresa.
Morning, Sophie.
How are you going?
Good. My brain's riddled with a million things to do this weekend and this week ahead.
So much.
It's one of those weeks, isn't it?
It totally is. So what's first up on your list?
Well, you heard from Nicole earlier about the show Enough Kalas at UNSW Galleries. Actually, below in the gallery, underneath, is Christian Thompson's Ritual Intimacy. It's a 15-year survey of the artist's work. It's video, sculpture, self-portraits. If you don't know him, please go and check it out. If you know him, also please check it out. It's an incredible exhibition of his work, dissecting, you know, our colonial past and his Indigenous identity. Also this weekend, obviously, there is Sydney Comedy Festival, Sydney Writers Festival, Sydney Korean Festival.
Oh!
Tonight, there's a Scottish indie band Bell and Sebastian at the Sydney Opera House. Still tickets available. There is so much on. Today is free comic book day.
Yeah, head on to your local comic book store.
Please do. And, you know, Sydney Film Festival just announced its full program. One of my favourite things to do, sit down, look through the program and pick your best.
Excellent. So heaps to do this week and this week